Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's podcast of the Best Bits of the Breakfast Show from Virgin Radio with Sky. Coming up, the fantastic Gary Light when he chats his Saturday songwriting sessions live on Instagram. Rich Roll tells us about his fantastic career in the world of podcasting. Sir Bob Geldof tells us about the Boomtown Rats' brand new single, Here's a Postcard. Plus, Beverly Knight, Johnny Owen and Vicky McClure, Max Halley and so much more on the way. Dapper Dave, who's our first guest?
Our next guest and his gang exploded back on the scene earlier this year with the new album Citizens of Boomtown. 36 years in the making and they had a lot to say. The latest single, Here's a Postcard, is out now, and delivering it today is Bobby Boomtown himself, the one and only Bob Geldof.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
How are you, Bob?
Good, thanks, guys. How are you?
Very well, very well. Now, we're going to talk about the documentary. We'll play the brand new Rat single in a second or two, but I watched the documentary last night. I watched the first 5 minutes and I paused it. I thought, hang on a minute, this is a bit good. So I went to put the kids to bed. I went for a comfort break. I got a glass of wine. I went back to the beginning and watched it again. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. It's 1 hour, 32 minutes. It's absolutely fantastic. So let's talk about this now. Some questions for you. Lots of questions. So here we go. In the film, we see the handwritten lyrics for She's So Modern, and it says she's 21st century. 21st, it says in the handwritten lyrics, but it became 20th century in the recording. What happened there?
I was on the tube, and don't forget, we'd arrived from Ireland, which was really living in another century, and we'd arrived right in the middle of this massive cultural revolution called punk, from which a lot of the contemporary bands get their sound from and everything. And, you know, here we were amongst these young girls who were just as rebel as any of the boys, just as wild, just as funny, just as mad, just as outrageous, just as vocal. And I was on the tube one day, and opposite me were two or three kids coming in from the suburbs, and they had their tights torn, their fishnets torn, and their hair was a mess, and they look amazing, and I just took out this little notebook and just said, "She's so 21st century," because I thought, here comes the new age. This is completely different to what I'd seen. But then Mutt Lange, who was the producer, said, "Forget the next century. You've got to make it about people now, because that's what you're singing."
Ooh, that's quite wise, isn't it?
But not wishing to bring it around to the present, I was on your show when we played the last single, Trashcan Baby, and I told the story that I wrote that having seen a kid in very similar circumstances in a shop on the King's Road, moaning about it being Saturday, looking fantastic, making a theatre of herself. She was about 16, and I just thought back to those girls on the tube in the late 70s and thought, yeah, this kid's a song as well.
So the Rats are back. They're bigger. They're better than ever. You're tighter than you've been. You were first time around. You play for us at Carfest. Were the gigs booked this year? Have you put things on hold? What's going on live-wise?
The worst thing, you know, I was on your show before the lockdown. We brought out the album. We announced the tour, brought out the book. And on the day we did, lockdown was announced. So everything was sort of stillborn. We've rescheduled the tour till October, November, but I don't know what sort of sense you're getting from the people listening in, Chris. I'm not sure people are going to go to large packed places yet. I don't think that'll happen for a while. I mean, are you going to go to a club or a theatre or a big festival with 20,000 people all jumping around? I'm not sure that's going to happen. So we got whacked with it, but you know, put that in context with other people who've lost their job. I'm okay. I've got a big garden. I can, you know, write tunes and send them up to the guys. I can do all that. So I can't moan, really. I'm sort of actually enjoying the enforced indolence, you know, if you like, guilt-free inactivity. But I'd like, it's a pity because it's a good record. Whether we'll be able to revive it when everyone comes out of these conditions, I don't know. But there you go, it's what it is.
All right, Bob, it's lovely to talk to you. I literally can't recommend this film highly enough. And it's quite clear, and I hope you forgive me for saying this, that you didn't have a guiding hand in the edit. And I really like that. It's all the better for it. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. What did you think of the first time you saw it?
Do you know when you look at old film of yourself as a kid, whether it's cine or old video, and you're looking at a 7 or 8 year old, and you think, haha, that's funny, but it's an objective view. It's you, and you've lived that, but you're distant from yourself. So I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm sort of laughing at things I know I've done, or good God, did I say that? You know, but it's kind of not me. More interestingly, I found out more about the men that I spend huge amounts of my life all the time with, all the time. Like, you know, in rock and roll, you're in the bus, you're in the plane, you're in the train, you're in the hotel, you're doing the sound check, you're doing the interviews, you're doing the gig, all together, all the time for years. And I found out more about those men and was very interested in them than ever I discovered in however many years we were together. And I felt sad that I hadn't worked out that Jerry had this, as I say, brutally dysfunctional family. It explains a lot about him. But, you know, we were guys. We didn't talk about it. We were young men on the make. We were desperate to scramble out of what we'd come from. And we were loving it. And that joy and that anxiety. And I found it a very interesting story, not like a rockumentary, not like a thing. I found it compelling. And I think the director did an amazing job. It's a good film. You don't even have to know or like what it's about.
Yeah, it's a great film. I love it. Okay, so that's a film from the Boomtown Rats. Thank you, Bob.
God bless, Chris.
Ta-da.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Next up, we've got Super Sub Sam Pinkham chatting to a fantastic guest, Dapper Dave. Who am I talking about?
Between binge-watching Line of Duty and Normal People, our next guest has been doing what he does best. His collaborative Instagram shenanigans, Saturday Songwriter, are still going strong. So please welcome, live from LA, where it's daft o'clock and he's up talking to us. It's Snow Patrol's Gary Lightbody.
Here he is. Morning, Gary.
Morning. Morning. Sam. Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Mate, lovely to have you on the show. Line of Duty, fabulous, isn't it?
Yes. I was a late arrival at that show, and to my eternal shame, because it's filmed in Northern Ireland. But I binged a lot of it, and it's amazing.
So, Gary, just for those of you who just joined us for the first time and weren't listening when you were on with Chris a month or so ago, tell everybody about the Saturday Songwriter and how it works.
So we've been doing this for exactly 9 weeks now. Just did the ninth one on Saturday there. Basically, I go on live on Instagram every Saturday evening in the UK at 8 o'clock, and I ask people for chords. I just say pick a letter between A and G, and they give me letters. I pick the first four. I make a melody with those chords. I do that four times. I then get people to vote on which melody of the four they like the best. That's the melody we go with. And then I ask people for lyrics, and they give me lots of lyric suggestions, and I write them as many down as I can in about 20 minutes. And then I go away for an hour, and I put it all together and come back on live an hour later. So the whole process takes about 90 minutes. I come back on live and play the song finished, you know, or at least the acoustic guitar version of the song finished. And then I send the song to Ian Archer, our wonderful producer, and send it to the rest of the guys, and we turn it into a Snow Patrol song.
And I'm sorry to say this, because I shouldn't sound surprised, but they are so good, aren't they? I mean, I know they're going to be good because they're put together by you, but you must be so proud of it. I've heard all the songs. You must be so proud of them.
I am, it is such a great, it's really, really a collective process. There are words from a different person, and there'll all be different people every week that get the lines in the songs, but there's words from a different person in every single line of every single song. So it really is a collaborative process, you know, so it does, and they always seem to... I know that there is a sort of a collective thing, a collective consciousness at the moment we're all going through, that So perhaps that's what's informing the lyrics. But I don't really ask, you know, I don't sort of choose a theme or anything most weeks. I did maybe for 1 or 2 weeks, but most of the time it's just whatever's on your mind. So it's kind of like it can be a therapy session, or it can be a hopeful, joyful, optimistic session. It can, you know, like basically it's just whatever's on your on anybody's mind, and it really does come together really well. I was not expecting, we've done 9 weeks and we've got 10 songs.
Right.
So I was not expecting that. I was maybe expecting, I don't know, I don't even know if I was expecting songs. I just thought it'd be a nice thing to do as a collective, you know.
And then Gary, on Thursday nights you also perform, you do a live gig every single Thursday night, your own music and covers of others as well. How does that feel in comparison to performing live in front of an audience? Because obviously with Snow Patrol having hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram, that you potentially could be performing to an even bigger audience than if you were performing live in front of them. How does it feel just before you go on Instagram Live?
Yeah, I did one on Facebook, and there was 250,000 people watching it. I was
wow.
like, is this the biggest gig we've ever
yes.
But I'm just sitting in my kitchen. Just sitting at my kitchen table, so it feels, there's like, yes, there is an element somewhere in the back of your mind, or maybe afterwards, where you think that was, you know, it reached a lot of people, but you're not thinking that at the time. You're just really just playing in your kitchen, and so many people are doing it, and so many musicians are playing, you know, kitchen gigs or back garden shows or what, you know, like it's been amazing to watch so many different gigs from so many different artists.
But also for people watching, because you're looking into your eyes as a viewer, you're looking at you sing, Gary. I reckon a lot of your mega fans would see that as even more of a connection than if they were watching you live on a stage, you know, and there are 100 people back.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a certain intimacy that comes from shows like that that maybe is missing from like an arena show or a festival or something like that. But it's a completely different vibe from actually playing live to an audience. That's for sure.
Do you get nervous at all? Do you get nervous before you go on?
I actually get I get nervous in these. I haven't been nervous before a gig in a long time, but I've been playing mostly covers these last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm not very good at covers, and I'm having to learn them all from scratch, like 10 covers, learn them from scratch. And it's not my forte at all. And there's actually been moments where I've had to stop a song like halfway through and go, I've just forgotten this bit. Sorry. Like, had to like listen to it on Spotify, like live on the show. Like, let me just listen to it for a second. Oh, yeah, now I remember. Okay. And then just pick it back up again.
Oh, but you.
So it's very, very homemade, that's for sure. There's nothing flawless about these shows.
What's it like afterwards, Gary? Because obviously, when you come off stage with the band and you go and have a beer or whatever afterwards, there's a slow come down. But after this, as soon as you disconnect from Instagram Live, 250,000 people just leave and they go back to their evening.
Well, I mean, that was Facebook. Instagram's
okay.
a lot less people on Instagram. But Snow Patrol Instagram.
Well, on Facebook then. But you must leave there and you must sit down on your sofa and put Line of Duty back on and go, right, on the normal life.
Yeah, I mean, I have went immediately into like making a cheese and ham sandwich like straight after. It does feel a little strange.
Yeah, I bet it does. Well, look, we've thoroughly enjoyed it. I sat in bed last night and I watched two or three of yours live, but I watched all of them last night and I was just totally engaged. And it's raw and it's real and it's, you feel so much more connected. You just do. You just feel very, very connected with you. If you haven't seen it, go to @SnowPatrol to watch.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Sir Rich, can you give us 1 minute on a bluffer's guide to who Rich Roll is and how he came about?
All right, I'll do my best. And I'll try to be brief, which is not my strength. Former recovering lawyer and recovering alcoholic, faces an existential / health crisis on the precipice of turning 40, decides to reinvent himself, ends up adopting a plant-based diet, and immerses himself in the world of ultra-endurance sports, happens to distinguish himself in a couple races, and live to tell the story.
And where are we now, and what do you do for a living?
So 53 now, still trying to get after it. I just did an Otillo swim run race on Catalina yesterday. So trying to continue to mix it up as best I can. And I spend my days doing a version of what you do, podcasting, writing. I do some public speaking. We host retreats. I've got some online stuff that I do, online meal planner, et cetera, but live my life in the digital space.
I mean, you've been doing this for this is your eighth year.
Correct.
You started in November 2012, I think. And I heard Program One the other day. I listened to it on purpose because I was going to come see you. I'd have gotten to it anyway, but I listened to it on purpose. And you pretty much hit the ground running. I mean, you know, the first thing I thought was, oh my goodness me, you're talking a lot quicker. But then I realized that I had it on 1.5 times on my phone. It was playing too quickly. So that was my fault, not yours.
Episode one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Wow.
But you pretty much hit the ground running. You know, you were exactly the same as you are now. You were talking around things, but then you got back to where you were. The biggest development I heard was when you talked to Mishka for the first time.
Mm.
And it was in your intro. It wasn't in the interview. Because in your intro, what was really interesting is the fact that you precursed it with the fact that you were going to go deep, and people might want to get ready for this one, you know, and you went a lot deeper than you thought you might. And I was expecting, you know, a really sort of... Not a hard listen, but I was getting myself ready for it because you'd advised me to. But it was nowhere near as deep as you go now.
Mm.
So it's funny that back then, you know, I don't know if you remember that, but you've gone a lot deeper since with a lot less warning.
Well, I think that what I've discovered, if there is a specificity to what I do or a sweet spot, it's my ability to lead with empathy and provide a safe environment for people to open up and be a little bit more honest and open and vulnerable than they typically would in public or on some kind of, you know, media outlet. And that Mishka episode did really well. There was a rapport that I had with him, and I realized, like, oh, there's something unique and special about this dynamic that I think I want to double down on. And I think that's what distinguishes me from a lot of the other kind of shows that do something similar to what I do. Like, for me, I bring on these people who have tons of amazing information to impart. But my approach is that all of that is secondary. What's primary is being able to emotionally connect with that person and to get to the heart of who they are. And I trust that if I can do that and really connect, that whatever information is meant to be imparted will come about naturally. But my priority is to humanize the whole experience.
And would you ever consider doing, like, we have it in Britain, we have pop-up radio stations. So we have a national DAB license and all this kind of stuff. But every 4 or 5, we can get a license for 4 or 5 days where we pop up and we just happen anywhere. Uh-huh. So we could go to the Olympics, for example.
Right.
Would you ever consider doing, like, a summer where you do more podcast, maybe one a day or...
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to... like, I have a format that works, but, you know, it's like you always have to be, you know, playing around with it and you know, take risks. So I really want to start doing more of that, like getting flexible with the format. And the idea of creating a system where I could put up more content in a more facile way, like a daily show, would be incredible.
Can you just leave our listeners with something, a really good sort of takeaway?
You know, we're both 53, right? And I think when you reach our age or you're in your 40s, you start to think that, like, the die is cast and your life is what it is. And one thing I've come to really learn and embrace is that, you know, change is always possible and it's always at your fingertips. And although pain really is the thing that has only gotten me to change, the truth is that opportunity is always an arm's length away. And, you know, I've gone through periods in my life where I thought, this is it. It's never going to get better. And I've watched my life change and grow in miraculous ways I could have never predicted. And what I take from that is that in my direct experience and the experience of so many of the guests that I've had on the show is that we all have so much more potential than we allow ourselves to believe. And the possibility that exists within all of us to be more fully expressed, to live more authentic to who we are, and to be more self-actualized in our physical lives, in our emotional, mental, and spiritual lives, I think is profound. And everything that I do is about trying to get people to recognize that and to take action in their own lives, because I really don't think that I'm all that special. I'm not some crazy gifted athlete. I've done a few things. I wrote a book that didn't make the New York Times bestseller list. I host a podcast that is by no means the largest podcast. But if I could change, you know, as profoundly as I have in my life, that means that this is available to everybody.
That was just a snippet of my incredible interview with Rich Roll. To hear the full interview, search for The Best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show wherever you get your podcasts from.
The Best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So that's three guests so far, but there's still so many more guests to come. Beverly Knight telling us all about her brand new cover of Bill Withers' Lean On Me. Nasser Hussain updates us on the world of cricket in lockdown. Max Halley discusses the glory of the sandwich. Ben Fogle tells us about his new children's book, Mr. Dog and the Faraway Fox. And Johnny Owen and Vicky McClure tell us about the brand new TalkSport show, Johnny Owen and Friends. All that coming up. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Whether you're the number one fan of Mondrian or don't know your art from your elbow, our next guest is a man worth listening to. His hit podcast, Talk Art, has some very special lockdown episodes available right now. So without further ado, please welcome the perfectly composed Mr. Russell Tovey.
Okay, who does know his art from his elbow? I like that, don't you, Russell?
I love that. Good morning, cool. Everyone.
Good morning. Good morning. You're very
good
welcome.
Morning.
Okay, talking art, core art. Quarantine. Love it.
Yes.
Right
now,
who have you been talking to and what have they been liking?
Well, Chris, we have, since lockdown, probably recorded about 30 episodes with the most dynamic voices in culture right now. Mm-hmm. People that they will know very well are people like Elton John, Billy Porter, Rufus Wainwright. But then we've had other incredible like artists like Lisa Scavige, who's one of the most forefront artists in America right now. Jordan Castile is a young artist who's making waves. Samaya Critchlow is a British artist. It's amazing. Doran Langberg. The list goes on and on and on. We've been doing 2 a week. Normally, we drop one every Friday, but now we're doing Tuesday and Friday during this quarantine season. And it's been mad, but it's been incredible. And it feels like we've created this little archive of culture for this period of time, like a time capsule.
And so, you know, to hear you talk about it, you're so fluent in it. You're so deep into this, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm obsessed. I'm an art geek, Chris.
It's great. It's lovely to hear. And also, you know, because I'm similar, you know, but in other worlds. So when I get home from work, from my job that I love, which I shouldn't call work, you know, I've got my family to dive into and enjoy, which gives me perspective, you know, looking back onto what I do for a living. And then I've got a sort of a third corner to all this, which is my passions and my interests, which gives me perspective back onto my family and my job. And it's really helpful, isn't it, to sort of run around from one world to another.
It's the best thing ever to diversify. I mean, I'm an actor. I've been an actor since I was a kid. But as I've got older, to be able to do other things outside of acting, especially in the current climate. I mean, if I was relying now on a job as an actor, I'd be pulling my ears off. But it's you're able to do that and have all these other passions and bring them all together in the mix is, yeah, it's a gift.
And the great thing about coming up with a podcast to do with something that you like is that it's a fantastic excuse to meet and talk to your heroes, like, you know, Ian McKellen, like Tracy Emin, and you've done all this.
Exactly. It is really, it gives you access to be able to talk to these people, yeah, that are your heroes. I mean, what other world can you do that? And yeah, it's incredibly exciting. And myself and my friend Robert Diamond, who I do it with, we feel very privileged that we get to access these people's brains.
And Barry Humphries, huge art collector. Is he on your radar?
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
I know that. Yes.
Massive.
Why not?
No, massive. One of the biggest private modern art collections, post-war modern art collections in the world.
No way. Okay,
absolutely.
Well, that's on the list. Right, put us in contact with Barry, please.
Okay, Steve Martin.
Ask Steve Martin. Steve Martin said no. I've met Steve Martin and I've seen his art collection in his apartment and it's next level, but he said no, he wouldn't talk to us.
Well, how
in a polite way.
Well, if he invites you into his home, why won't he talk to you on your podcast?
It's a bit different than putting a microphone in front of him.
I suppose so. What kind of stuff is adorning his walls?
Oh, my God. Well, there's, like, obviously Picasso and Bacon, and there's Edward Hopper in there. But there's an artist who I love called Giorgio Morandi, who's this post-war painter. Well, no, pre-war painter who does still lifes, basically. But these paintings go for an absolute fortune. I remember I came out of the elevator, and I was with my friend, and he said, oh, come in. And he walked in, and then his wife was there, and I went, oh, my God, in the hallway they had two Giorgio Morandis. Now, these paintings are over $1 million each. And I went, oh, my God, you got two Giorgio Morandis. She went, no, around the corner there's a third. I was like, okay. And you walked around the corner, and there was another Giorgio Morandi. I was like, this is insane.
See, we are on the brink of a conversation about art here, aren't we?
We're on the conversation about art.
It's
We're on it. We're riding it. We're riding that art wave, Chris.
I'm getting really nervous.
You're doing good.
God, I'm
nervous as well.
I'm sweating. What did Elton have to say about his art? Because I know he loves a painting or two.
Well, it's more photography. Elton's got one of the biggest, most important photography collections in the world, and historical photography. And when he's buying works that people were sort of not looking at. But what's exciting about what Elton does is he's really interested in photojournalism. So photographs that you see in the newspaper that you're like, wow, that's an incredible image from like war-torn Syria or from all over the world, all these images that we're seeing every day. He collects that image and archives it and keeps it and contacts the photographer, which is an incredible way to collect photography. But he's had his collection at like the Tate in the show called The Radical Eye a few years back. And he knows exactly what he likes and what everyone is and what everyone's doing. And he's totally passionate. So to have him on was just the dream because he's a serious collector.
Did he let slip about his Picasso ceramic collection?
Has he got a Picasso ceramic collection? No, he said about his Bacon, which he sold,
always uses the photographic collection as a front, as a smokescreen for what's really hanging on the lounge walls, let me tell you.
Well, all that Picasso stuff, again, is something that Madura ceramics were created, and it wasn't until like probably about 10 years ago that people started to pay attention to them. You used to be able to pick them up for a few hundred quid.
Not anymore, my friend.
Have
you ever talked to anybody about Giacometti?
We have. People have been inspired by Giacometti. A lot of sculptors, a lot of ceramicists. Of course. Diego Giacometti, yes.
John Hughes, you know John Hughes, the famous director, movie director, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He's a big Giacometti fan, and that's why in Ferris Bueller's Day Off there's that scene where they run through the art gallery.
Oh, in the Met, when they go and see the sculptures.
What he did was he filled it with all his favourite artists just for a bit of a laugh.
Ah, oh, and were they all the original ones?
Yeah,
I always think that in movies.
Of course they were. Gotta go. Ace, thanks for talking to us. I'd love to have you on the show again. Please come back anytime you like.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has conquered the charts, bossed musical theatre, and is now set on stealing your hearts. She's heading up an all-star version of the classic Lean On Me, raising funds for NHS Charities Together and UOK Doc. So please welcome the stupendous superstar of soul that is Beverly Knight.
Good morning, Beverly.
Now, so,
Hello. Come in, Beverly.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, congratulations on the song. Well, I know you very well, unlike some of your family. Tell us what's been going on over the last few weeks.
Oh, my poor mum and my brother were not well at all. They had suspected COVID-19 and they were just in the absolute wars. It was such a nightmare. But they're better now. They're nice and recovered and it's all good. So I'm thrilled.
And they were admitted to hospital, weren't they? You got quite serious for a while.
They were taken to hospital, but they weren't actually admitted.
And
I'll be honest with you, I'm quite glad about that because that would have terrified me.
All right, Beverly. Now, you're doing something about this anyway, but is it true that like a third of your family work for the NHS or have done?
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. My mum, retired nurse, mm-hmm. so she knew what they were going through in that hospital. My sister works for NHS 111 in the West Midlands. I've got two aunts who work in the local Wolverhampton hospital. Got a couple of uncles who work in a Birmingham hospital as nurses. So, and then loads of cousins. I mean, loads. So,
can they all sing as well as you? I bet they can't they? Does it run in the family?
Do you know something? that singing does run in the family.
Oh,
it really
so
does.
Nice.
My sister, my brother, yeah.
We've never talked about this. When did you first belt out a tune in front of some people and they thought, oh my goodness me, she can really do this?
I was about four.
No way.
And I was at church, the old church story.
Right.
And my mum was up there singing. So I decided that I needed to be up there singing because I was already the biggest show off in the world by that point.
Right.
And went up there and did my thing. And the congregation were like, oh, yes, oh, she sounds wonderful. She might have a career.
And when did
and
it,
all these years later.
When did it change from, like, something that you love doing anyway? When was your first paycheck? When did you first get paid for singing?
I was about 15,
right.
16, and a local radio station asked me to do a jingle,
mm-hmm.
and I had this whole thing in my head of how I wanted to do it, so I went to a studio and just laid out, you know, multi-vocal jingle, like the old school close harmony jingles
from
back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and I did that, and everyone was like, who's this kid who's just done this jingle with all these harmonies and things? And that was the catalyst that got me getting gigs.
What was the tipping point for you? What was the big tipping point?
The big tipping point, when I first signed my deal, I was 21. Just trying to think. After that, when I released Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda, which was my third album in, everything went crazy. My whole life changed.
What are you up to now and who with, and what's it for?
So we talked a bit about my mum and my brother not being well with suspected COVID-19. So myself, lovely Joss Stone, and a load of other gorgeous people, we all got together with these guys, Dominic and Alexander Lyon. It was their idea in the first place, but we all got together to record a cover of Lean On Me, the Bill Withers classic, to raise money for the charity UOK Doc,
mm-hmm.
and also NHS Charities Together.
Beautiful.
And they look after the mental well-being of doctors and nurses who are going through this madness on the front line. And, you know, and before all of this started, you know, suicide was so prevalent among doctors, let alone the figures now where they've shot up because of people just not being able to cope. So that's where we're trying to raise money to help those charities step in and just support these guys through this tough time.
Yeah, because they're having to keep going, aren't they? You know, and the aftermath of what's going to go on with you know, like the Mental Health Week as well this week,
of course.
Mental Health Awareness Week. You know, we need to do anything we can to help look after everybody who's been looking after us. And it's the only thing we can do, really, to pay them. Apart from look after ourselves more and lessen the future burden on their everyday lives. Right, so Dr. Ranj Singh is in there as well, I understand. Over 100 artists recording this song.
That's right, yeah. Oh, Dr. Ranj was brilliant. I didn't even know he could sing. I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, can he? I mean, you know, you're allowed to say he can't because it's a charity song, nobody will mind. But unfortunately, disappointingly, he can sing.
He can. He can move as well.
I know he can move.
Yeah,
we've all seen him move, for heaven's sake, but I didn't know he could sing as well. Blinking heck.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
As sport figures out how to start again, what better way to celebrate than with a new sports show? Johnny Owen and Friends starts on TalkSport this Sunday at 9 a.m. And here to tell all is the man whose name is above the door and the lady who, let's face it, is really pulling the strings. It's Johnny Owen and Vicky McClure.
Good morning, guys. Morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Who wants to go first? Johnny or Vicky? You choose.
I'll let Vicky go first.
I think we talk over each other.
It's like Mr. and Mrs., isn't it? Okay, who'd like to go first? I think I'll let Vicky go first. So, Vicky, the reason you're on this show with Johnny is because you're his partner.
Yay!
Hurrah!
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, for people who don't know, I mean, you're both pretty successful anyhow in this business called show. Tell everybody what you do, Vicky. Of course I know, but other people might not. And how you met Johnny and then what he does. So you be the hostess with the mostest. Off you go.
So I'm an actor. I'm Johnny's partner.
Yep.
And Johnny's got a brand new show coming out on Sunday on TalkSport called Johnny Owen and Friends. And apparently I'll be sort of being roped in here and there to do a few things.
Well, hang on a minute, Vicky, tell everyone about Line of Duty. Tell them, you know.
Oh, and Line of Duty, yes. Yeah, so
for heaven's sake, come on, this is the big sell. Come on, Vicky.
Well, sadly, we've halted filming for Line of Duty at the moment, so. No news on when that's coming back out.
No, but hang on a minute. People don't even know you're in it. They don't know you're in it yet. Tell them that you're in it.
Oh, I'm in it.
Yay!
Oh, sorry. And I'm in Line of Duty.
And you've been in all of them.
And I'm in a new show called Alex Rider. That's coming out on the 4th of June.
Very
which
good.
Is like a teenage sort of James Bond action-packed series going on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. There's my plug.
There you go. So Vicky knows her stuff. Right, now, Johnny and Vicky work together. Johnny, have you won a BAFTA?
Yes, I did.
What did you win?
BAFTA for a documentary I did about Abba Van.
Okay,
back, 10 years ago now.
Where have you put your BAFTA? Where is
I
your
put BAFTA? It on the shelf in our living room.
Okay. And now, are you two? I know you're together in life, but are you together geographically at the moment?
No,
not
I'm in
moment,
London,
no.
Right?
And she's in Nottingham.
Okay, but you, obviously there's no rift here. There's nothing that we need to disclose, is there? Because that's a terrible way to start a new radio show together.
No. I'm down in London geographically because obviously I've got to go in to do the show. I'm in this afternoon, tomorrow, practicing, right. And I'm just going live on Sunday.
Right, so you two are doing this show. It's on TalkSport. It's at 9 o'clock. What are you going to talk about this week? Because sport has started to percolate again. And Johnny, if you don't mind me asking this question up front, live and personal, how did you get the gig? What are your qualifications for doing a show about sport on the radio?
Well, I've done some films about football that did okay. And I work at Nottingham Forest Football Club. I'm on the board there. I'm a director in charge of media and communications. And I've done some stuff for TalkSport, sort of coming in and sort of deputising as a presenter. And they liked me. And they sort of asked me, would I like to do my own show?
Good
and
for
get
you.
Some interesting people in.
Good
said,
for
fantastic.
You. Okay.
Love to get you on, actually, Chris, at some point.
No problem.
I think you'd be great.
Done deal. Johnny Owen and friends. Number one friend, of course, Vicky, though, your life partner. Now, you're not, mm-hmm. Not only are you not together, you're not married yet, but is that work in progress as well?
Oh, yes, that's work in progress. In fact, maybe that's something I can, like, actually start to look at whilst I'm in lockdown. There's not been any time, so you know, I'm sure there'll be venues available at some point.
Week 9, let's get married.
I think people are doing it online, aren't they? Maybe we can do it online, baby.
Well, apparently weddings are going to start again outdoors, aren't they? That's the thing, outdoors. Well, I mean, was there a date set anyhow, or was this something you were still
thinking? No, we hadn't set a date. We've both been so busy, so. Right. Luckily, we hadn't set a date because, you know, I feel for lots of people at the minute that have got lots of weddings planned and, you know, obviously that's all gone down the pan. So, yeah, nothing planned.
Chris, do you want to set a date for us, Chris? You could be like Cilla Black.
Don't really mind. What would be a good day? When did you meet? What was the date that you met? Can you remember?
March the 10th, level.
Oh, 4th
of March,
was it? Before. I think it's the
4th of March.
Well, who cares?
My wife and I can't decide on our wedding anniversary. It's not just one of us that's forgotten, it's both of us. It's either the 12th or the 15th of August. But we can never decide, so it doesn't matter. As long as you love each other, that's all.
Celebrate both dates,
yeah,
surely.
We celebrate from the 12th to the 15th. It's very convenient, to be honest with
you. Yeah, perfect.
Right, Johnny, so sport is percolating. It's coming back. You know, Bundesliga has started. Any idea what's on the agenda conversation-wise this Sunday on your brand-new show on TalkSport, 9 o'clock?
Yeah, well, we've got Stephen Graham in, who's a fine actor, one of the best out there at the moment. He's coming on and he's talking about his love of Liverpool. Uh-huh. And we've got Sean Dyche on as well. He's going to give us a quick run-through about what they've been doing, the Premier League managers, how they've been coping day-to-day.
Interesting.
At Forest, they're back in training next week, safe distancing, obviously. But I think we're heading towards it, Chris, the next 2-3 weeks. There'll be certainly Premier League football, I should imagine.
Yeah, and you've got all the Sunday papers as well, because that's always fun, isn't it? The back pages there and the Sunday supplements, the pull-outs. How are you feeling about it? You say you're into to rehearse and practice, but the thing about a radio show is, it's good to come in. Of course it is. I know you've done it before, to familiarise yourself with a new format. But there's nothing like being on the radio, is there, itself? So it's. But the great thing is, it's not like telly. So, you know, you do 3 hours a week as opposed to half an hour a week. So the flying hours come thick and fast, and before you know it, you know, you're up in the air for good.
It's such a different, like saying, skill, really, isn't it? And it's so instant as well. I've forgotten, you know, they go like, oh, we worry about that an hour before. I'm like, an hour before in telly? It's like 3 months before you plan things. But I do like the spontaneity of it, like you said. It gives you that adrenaline buzz, and there's nothing like it, I don't think.
Right, Vicky, have you been briefed to what your role might or might not be?
No, I think it's best I'm not. It might be funnier.
And are you going to be there throughout, or will you pop up at 10:15, 10:45, 11:15, or what?
Yeah, it depends what time I get up. We'll see. No, I'm joking. I don't really know. I don't really have a massive lot of football chat in me.
Right.
But I think that's probably why I'm being dragged in.
Okay, good. All right, Johnny. will there be a quiz? Will there be giveaways or...?
Yeah, I think we're planning to do some quizzes and some giveaways, all sorts of things to keep people sort of entertained. I think it's the idea is to do something a little different, you know, football culture, getting people on like Stephen Graham, people like yourself, people from film and TV to talk about their love of football. I think that's the sort of the general theme of it, because I'm from this world as well, to get my mates on to have a chat about football and the game we all love.
Could we say it's a bit like Soccer AM on the radio? Is that fair enough?
Touch like that, yeah. I'm okay. A big fan of Soccer AM as well.
I love Soccer AM, and it's still brilliant, isn't it? It's still funny. Yeah. All right,
absolutely.
Mate. Well, Johnny, good luck. I'll be listening. Johnny Owen and Vicky McClure. Well done, Vicky. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Johnny Owen and friends, Talk Sport this Sunday from 9 o'clock. A brand new show right here from the Wireless Group.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Everyone knows that the foundation of British society is built entirely upon a damn good sandwich. Max's sandwich book, The Ultimate Guide to Creating Perfection Between Two Slices of Bread, is out now. And here to tell us all about it is a man most definitely not a sandwich short of a picnic. It's the wonderful Max Halley!
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Hey!
Hey, Max, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, thanks. How's it going?
Very, very well. I mean, this is the time for sandwiches, isn't it? A, it's National Sandwich
Week. It's like Sandwich Christmas, isn't it? Yeah,
people, we've never seen so many picnics in modern times taking place. So
No. Tell
us what you want, don't tell us what you don't want.
What do I want? I want everyone to eat more sarnies and enjoy themselves enormously.
All right, so the ultimate guide to creating perfection between two slices of bread. Where do you start? I mean, it's, you know, people say, you know, why have you written a book about sandwich making? It's obvious, but no, there are twists and there are turns and there are pearls of wisdom and there are nuggets of gold. Off you go, my friend.
Well, I don't know, do you want me to begin? First thing you do when you look at anything is think, can I mix that into mayonnaise? And the next thing you think is what's going to happen when I chuck that in the deep fat fryer.
I love it. Okay, so where would you start? What kind of bread would you use? Your go-to bread. One more sandwich before you die.
What? Oh, God, probably the BLT, I reckon.
Yeah.
If I could only have one more ever again. And the bread, I don't think it really matters as long as it's got crust everywhere.
Right.
Because then you can soak up more juice, you can condiment more heavily, and you're not going to... You know, you're not going to lose your structural integrity.
Now, I do believe your two go-to accessorizations, your two zhuzhes, your two main items of pimping up of the sandwich are, in fact, mayonnaise and, is it Tabasco?
Yeah, by mayonnaise, Tabasco. Ooh. I think malt vinegar, a bit of malt vinegar and some mayonnaise is a wonderful thing. I think as long as you're putting, you know, acidy, pickly things in with fatty things, then you're basically onto a winner. I wanted to ask you, who is it you've got there who's done the mashed potato sandwich?
Aussie Jane, of course, Aussie Jane.
Aussie Jane, congratulations, as far as I'm concerned.
Boom.
You have completed the
Aussie
sandwich.
Aussie Jane, come in, everyone. Let's talk about your sandwiches. You know,
Aussie Jane, you legend. Get some crisps in there as well and you're really done.
See,
Aussie Jane, you're my hero.
Come on, Aussie Jane. Come on. Talk to Max.
Come on.
Aussie Jane is now in the studio. She's got headphones on. She can hear you, Max. Off you go.
Aussie Jane, it is a pleasure to make your acquaintance. You are clearly quite a sandwicher.
I mean, the mashed potato is a classic in my family.
And it has to be leftover mashed potato.
Always leftovers.
So you can't make mashed potato purely for the sake of a sandwich?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, you can.
It's better the next day.
I guess it's not far off having, like, bubble. Do you fry it or anything like that, or just chuck it in?
No, just chuck it in. You know, you get your salted butter in the mashed potato and put a bit of ketchup on top, butter the bread. It's perfect.
Can I have a taste of your mashed potato sandwich, Shane?
Go for it, Chris.
Okay, here we
That's
go.
It. Well, I'm going to close my sandwich shop down and open Max's mashed potato
you've got to see it.
Shop.
Max, you've got to see it. You know when you slice a really good cheese on your pasty through the middle?
Yeah.
That's what you're looking at here now.
It's got
a rainbow of red sauce. You know, it's got a roof of red sauce. It's beautiful. Because in Australia, you inject pies with sauce, don't you? That's why you have the pointy ketchup nozzle.
All of the ketchup bottles there have a nozzle on the top just for the
pie. And you inject, don't you?
Mate. I'm not going to lie. That's my approach to, like, pasties and stuff in Greggs and things like that as well. Yeah. Lift the top up, squeeze the ketchup in, lift back on.
I'm going in for the mashed sandwich, actually.
Oh my God, I wish I had a mashed potato
it's
sandwich.
It's so nice because the mash provides the moisture. Oh my
God. Yeah, it's actually juicy, right?
Now, Max, because you've written a book called, what is it called?
It's called Max's Sandwich Book, creatively.
And because you're on the radio talking about sandwiches on National Sandwich Week, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You own a sandwich shop, so the pressure on your sandwiches must be massive.
Luckily, this is a burden I can carry. The truth is, I'm extremely lucky to be able to sit around all day thinking about sandwiches for my actual living. I'm living the dream down here.
I love it. Crouch End or Cruchon. You know, how many customers, how many sandwiches would you serve a day? How is it under lockdown? How has things changed for you?
At lockdown, it's changed completely because it is closed completely.
Right.
We shut on the 18th of March and have not opened. We're not doing takeaway, nothing. We're just closed.
Okay.
And like, you know, God bless this furlough scheme and stuff, right? Look, everyone who works in the sign shop is still getting paid by the government. It's
so
amazing.
So when will you get back, do you think?
Well, the truth is, I don't know. I think it's, you know, the uncertainty's awful, isn't it? I think it'll just be when it seems sensible. Then we'll reopen, and not before then.
All right.
What we normally do, we're only open at night. We don't do the daytimes.
This is good.
And we're shut completely on Mondays and Tuesdays. But we would normally do about 1,000 people a week.
Love it. Okay,
so on average, about 200 a day.
Right, Marvellous Mira, here comes some great culinary stock because her mum makes the best samosas in the world. Also a vegan. What are we looking at here now? Bombay Mix Sarni.
Yes, I've got a sandwich like that called the Bargee Smuggler.
The Bargee Smuggler?
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's got Bombay mix in it.
Right.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm going in for this one, by the way. Tash, if you're listening, don't need any lunch today. Maybe not even any tea. Hang on a second. Okay, here we go. Listen to this.
Ooh. Oh, listen to that. That's what you want.
No, seriously.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that's very cheap white bread as well, isn't it? The best. If you're going to have a crisp sandwich, you go for the 17p loaf.
Yeah, definitely.
You've got to do that. Okay, and we're missing one here. Whose is this one? Well, Rich's, of course. Yeah. What's this one again, Tom?
Ham, cheese, red onion and tomato.
Okay, none of us can eat that because we're all vegan and vegetarian.
I will imagine myself eating it.
Okay, Rich.
It's lovely.
Rich knew that, and he's made it on purpose with ham in it.
So that he can have it all.
He doesn't even like ham. He says. He says, but bring it back to me. Bring it back my way. Max, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, mate. Cheers. Okay. Viva the sandwich.
I love it, and I hope you get back to work soon.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We have a legend to talk to. Dapper Dave, who's on the show next?
With cricket bowled out for a duck by the pandemic, it seemed overs might be over for the foreseeable, but there is a glimmer of hope. The cricket show's on Sky Sports News every Thursday, and here to tell us when we might see the beginnings of winning innings is the embodiment of a good knock. It's Nasser Hussain.
Good morning, Nasser.
Good morning. What a build-up. Thank
I know.
You very much.
Don't let us down, right? It's Vassa on Nasser. Fill your boots.
Hey, Nasser. So I'm looking at the back page of the Mail this morning. I've got Stuart Broad pictured. Actually, he's got his own private at Ladies' Loo on his return to training yesterday. So where are we, Nasser, with cricket returning?
Yeah, we are making some baby steps, I think the ECB called it the other day, towards cricket returning. As you say, the players are back now, doing one-to-one training with their coaches, so they are out. We saw Stuart Broad yesterday, Chris Wokes, Sam Curran at various venues around the country, so they're back playing cricket, mainly the bowlers, because the bowlers take a lot longer to get themselves right physically before you can play a proper test match or whatever. So they're back playing, and there's some really good noises coming from Australia and Pakistan and West Indies. You know, there's no point England cricketers getting ready to play if they've got no one to play against. So as far as people coming across to play as well, there's some really good sounds coming out from various countries. So things are moving in the right direction, thankfully.
Yeah, we have grounds, don't we? We have the Aegeus Bowl and we have Old Trafford, of course, at Lancashire's ground, where there's a hotel on site. So everyone could sort of stay in their own little bubble. And I was looking at the news wires this morning. Snooker's back. Snooker's back on June the 1st, the first professional tournament. That's quite a socially distanced sport, obviously, snooker. And so's cricket, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, they're trying to get these venues that you talk about as biosecure as possible, so everyone's tested on the way in and on the way out. And throughout that week, they will virtually be in lockdown at those venues. But you're spot on. At those two venues in particular, the hotel is on the ground. You literally open your curtains and there is the Aegeus Bowl or Old Trafford. So you don't have to leave and, you know, maybe pick up the infection or whatever. So they are making it as secure as possible. They've had to tinker with not the laws of the game, but some of the playing conditions. Excuse me, beforehand, you know, you can obviously put saliva on the ball. They're now saying you can't put saliva on the cricket ball to polish it. You can use sweat, etc. Neutral umpires won't be able to fly in, so you'll have to have home umpires and things like that. So they're tinkering with various things. But I think, as Joe Root said to us on Sky Cricket the other day, as long as the integrity of the game is still there, as long as it's still a proper game of cricket, the players are very keen to buy into whatever the ECB ask them to do.
What are players going to do instead of saliva on the ball to shine it?
Well, I think it's just going to have to be good old, you know, fashioned sweat, really. It'll be quite difficult. You know, you've trained the brain. It's like when you go abroad and you're, you know, you put the windscreen wipers on and the indicator comes on, yeah, or whatever. You've trained the brain for so many years to do it one way. It's going to be tricky. You know, Stuart Broad would have polished the ball, would have got a bit of sweat, polished the ball, a bit of saliva on the ball, and there you go. Now the saliva is not allowed. And I think there's going to be a penalty runs if anyone is spotted doing that. So there will be certain things that will be at first quite tricky to do, but in comparison to what everyone else around the world is doing, I think cricketers can absolutely buy into that.
Could you use a bit of furniture polish or something?
Or even a bit of sandpaper, but we won't go down that road. Yes, there are certain things that you cannot use on a cricket ball, whatever environment you're in. So otherwise you just get, you know, someone taking a whole batch of stuff out there and try and get the ball swing. But I think that's the least of their worries at the moment, how to make a cricket ball swing.
I'm watching you guys on the cricket show. It's Thursdays at 2 o'clock on Sky Sports Cricket, which is channel 404. And I'm much more optimistic that we're going to see international cricket being played in this country by the end of the summer than I was, say, 2 weeks ago. Do you go along with that?
Yeah. I mean, the ECB have been quite brilliant in keeping everyone informed. We've lost a tournament in the 100, which was the domestic white ball tournament that was going to be introduced this summer. There's not enough crowds or international superstars are going to come across. And I think all credit actually goes to some of these teams from abroad. You know, let's be honest, if a cricketer here was asked, right, would you go now abroad to play cricket? You'd have to think long and hard about it. You know, just the quarantine. When West Indies land here, they're going to be in quarantine for 14 days. When Australia come, when Pakistan come. So you have to applaud some of these nations that at the moment are saying, look, we are absolutely ready to come. We'll do the quarantine. We'll do the social distancing and the biosecure environments. And it seems really odd to do all that for a game of cricket. But I think everyone realises that, you know, we're sort of family of cricket and we've got to do whatever it takes to get cricket back on. It will be behind closed doors. That's just a given for the foreseeable future. There's not going to be crowds. But we need to get the game back on if it is safe and secure. And also the sort of slightly moral standpoint as well, which I know some players are a little bit worried about, that they're not taking vital tests, etc., that your frontline worker might need or whatever. They don't want to be given any kind of priority that someone else might need.
Good stuff, Nasser. Thank you very much. You
not
take
a problem.
Care. Thanks for joining us this morning. Nasser Hussain from The Cricket Show, Sky Sports Cricket, channel 404, Thursdays at 2 p.m. It's essential viewing.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.